You are tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The following program is a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.
Hello, I'm Roy Shoman, and welcome once again to Salvation is from the Jews, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church, or, seen the other way around, the fulfillment, the completion, the perfection, the completion of Judaism in the Catholic Church and its sacraments. We're interested in this show in pretty much everything which touches on the area where Judaism meets the Catholic Church. If you've been listening for a while, you know that we sometimes discuss the Jewish liturgical year, the Jewish festivals, in the light of their Christological meaning, their meaning in the fulfillment of Judaism in Christianity. We sometimes have the great pleasure of having on Jewish entrants into the Catholic Church who discuss both the circumstances and usually the miraculous circumstances that led them to understand that Jesus was in fact the Jewish Messiah and brought them into the Catholic Church, and also in which they share their perspective on the continuation of Judaism into the Catholic Church, into Catholicism. Today, my intention is to do something a little bit different, and that is to read the account of a very dramatic conversion that took place actually in the 19th century. I'm going to be reading a chapter from one of my books, Honey from the Rock, which is published by Ignatius Press and is in itself a collection of 16 such Jewish Catholic witness testimonies or conversion stories, including my own, including some from the 19th century, some from the 20th century, and some, frankly, including my own and those of some other recent guests on the program and other Jews who are still alive, who are very happily in the Catholic Church. Anyway, I'll now begin reading the witness testimony conversion story of Herman Cohen from Honey from the Rock. On November 10, 1821, Herman Cohen was born into a wealthy Jewish family in Hamburg, Germany, a city that at that time was one of the country's foremost centers of economic, intellectual, and artistic activity. His father, a successful banker, was the leader of the liberal segment of the local Jewish community, which embraced a modern, enlightened form of Judaism, eschewing many of the traditional Jewish practices and beliefs. Both the young boy's intellectual brilliance and his extraordinary musical talent became apparent at a very young age, and while still a child, his performances on the piano made him the darling of Europe's cultural and artistic elite. Once in that glittering world of fame, parties, and loose morals, he fell into a full spectrum of vices into which he descended deeper and deeper. Rescued from that darkness by a miraculous grace received in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, Herman rededicated his life, this time to God, and embraced a life of prayer, contemplation, penance, and apostolic activity. He became a Carmelite priest and monk and was instrumental in reestablishing the Carmelite order in France, England, Ireland, and Scotland. He traveled throughout Europe, preaching and founding houses for the order. He died in 1871 from smallpox, contracted while administering extreme unction to soldiers dying of that disease. As a young child, Herman had a pious, devout nature and was much drawn to prayer. He loved going to synagogue and chanting prayers and psalms at home, an activity into which he would frequently draw his siblings. Yet even at that early age, he felt a certain dissatisfaction with Jewish observance. He wrote, quote, "When I saw the rabbi mount the steps of the sanctuary, draw the curtain, and open the door of the tabernacle, I waited expectantly. My expectation was not satisfied when I saw the Levites solemnly take out from a magnificent container a large roll of parchment studded with Hebrew letters and surmounted by a royal crown. The roll of parchment was then carried with great ceremony to a lectern, and the Hebrew scriptures were read aloud. I was full of anxiety during the whole of this ceremony." End of quote. Herman's extraordinary talents soon pulled him away in any case from his religiosity. His intellectual gifts were such that he soon far surpassed his older siblings in his knowledge of Latin, French, and other school subjects, and made him always first in his class. Yet even this intellectual brilliance paled beside his musical genius. At the age of 4, he begged to be taught to play the piano. By 6, he was playing all of the then popular opera tunes, to which he would add improvisations of his own. By 12, his professional recitals were the talk of the town. Unfortunately, his mother had entrusted him to a professor of piano of great talent but low morals. The example of this revered teacher, combined with the intoxication of his own success, had a corrosive effect on the young Hermann's morals. As Hermann Cohen later wrote, quote, "The teacher's great genius was enough to justify, in the eyes of the public, all of his whims and adventures, however irresponsible and scandalous. Since I admired him above anyone, I soon began to imitate his wild behavior. He loved gambling. I, alas, early on acquired the taste for it. He loved the horses and all the pleasures, and since he found the purses of his admirers always open to satisfy all his caprices, I began to think that there could be no existence on earth happier than that of an artist." Close quote. When Hermann was 12, his mother took him to Paris, the home of the finest musicians in Europe, to continue his musical education. When she was finally able to convince the great pianist Franz Liszt to hear the child play, he was immediately won over and took the prodigy under his wing. Soon they were inseparable. Unfortunately, Liszt's mores were every bit as disordered as Hermann's previous teachers had been, and Hermann was soon following his master in the paths of vice. Having grown up amidst constant attention and praise with every whim indulged, Hermann already was terribly spoiled, arrogant, and self-centered, which only exacerbated the situation. The constant adulation he received as the darling of the concert halls and salons of Paris worsened things even further. The young musician's adventures over the next decade were a continual chain of ups and downs, artistic and popular successes, romantic alliances, including with other musicians and singers, young married women, even a circus performer. His self-centered hedonism and irresponsibility caused Hermann to alienate friends and burn out friendships. His gambling resulted in repeated financial catastrophes that also took a toll on his relationships. He lived only for the pleasures of the moment, as he himself would later write, quote, "I am not exaggerating. All the young people I knew lived like me, seeking pleasure wherever it was to be found, passionately wanting wealth in order to be able to indulge all their inclinations, satisfy all their desires. The thought of God never occurred to them. Their morals were limited to those necessary to stay out of trouble with the law." But then the decisive moment of Hermann's conversion came when, at the age of 26, he was asked to fill in directing the choir at a church service. As he wrote in his own words, beginning of the quote, "It happened during May 1847. Mary's month was celebrated with great pomp at the church of St. Valère. Some amateur choirs were formed and would sing there, drawing a lot of people. Prince Muscova, who led these pious concerts, and whom I already had the honor of knowing, asked me one evening if I would take his place directing the choirs. I agreed and went solely for my love of music and the desire to do a friend a favor. During the ceremony I felt nothing special, but at the moment of benediction, even though I had no intention to prostrate myself like the rest of the congregation, I felt an indefinable agitation. My soul, deafened and distracted by the discord of the world, refound itself, a bit like the prodigal son coming to his senses, and sensed that something previously entirely unknown was taking place. I felt for the first time a very powerful but indefinable emotion. Without any participation of my will, I was forced, despite myself, to bow down. When I returned the following Friday, the same emotion came over me even more powerfully, and I felt a great weight that descended over my whole body, forcing me to bow, even prostrate myself, despite myself, and I was struck with a sudden thought of becoming Catholic. A few days later I was passing near the same church of St. Valère. The bells were ringing for Mass. I went in and was present at the Holy Sacrifice, remaining motionless and attentive throughout. I stayed for 1, 2, 3 Masses without a thought of leaving, although I had no idea what was keeping me there. After having returned home involuntarily, I was led to go out again that evening and go back to the same place the bells made me enter once again. The Blessed Sacrament was exposed, and as soon as I saw it, I was drawn to the altar rail and fell to my knees. This time, at the moment of benediction, it was easy for me to bow down, and getting up again, I felt a very sweet peace in my whole being. I returned to my room and went to bed, but throughout the entire night my mind was, whether in dream or awake, occupied with the thought of the Blessed Sacrament. I burned with impatience to be at more Masses. In the following days I attended many at St. Valère, always with an inner joy that absorbed all my faculties. I wanted to see a priest to settle down the agitation that was incessantly troubling my spirit since this extraordinary event. Eventually, I was introduced to Father Legrand. I told him what had happened to me. He listened with interest and exhorted me to be calm, to persevere in my current disposition, and to have wholehearted confidence in the paths that divine providence would not fail to point out to me. I found myself in the presence of a learned man, humble, kind, and open-hearted, looking entirely to God, not himself. End of quotation. Later that summer, Hermann found himself in Ems, Germany, to give a concert. As he described the experience, begin quotation, "The day after my arrival was a Sunday. Not caring about human respect, that is, despite the presence of my friends, I went to Mass. There, bit by bit, the prayers, the presence, invisible and yet felt by me, of a supernatural power began to act on me, agitate me, make me start trembling. In a word, divine grace deigned to descend on me with all its force. At the moment of elevation, all of a sudden I felt burst forth behind my eyelids a flood of tears that do not cease to flow with voluptuous abundance down my inflamed cheeks. I remember having cried a few times as a child, but no, never did I know such tears. While they were drowning me, I felt surge up from the depths of my chest, split open by my conscience, the most tearing remorse over my entire past life. All of a sudden and spontaneously, as though by intuition, I offered God a general confession, interior and rapid, of all of my enormous sins since childhood. I saw them there, piled up before me by the thousands, hideous, repulsive, revolting, deserving all of the anger of a sovereign judge. And yet, I also felt an unknown peace that soon spread over my entire soul like a soothing balm, that the God of mercy would forgive me these, that he would turn his gaze away from my crimes, that he would take pity on my sincere contrition, on my bitter sorrow. Yes, I felt that he would give me grace, and that he would accept in expiation my firm resolution to love him above all else, and to turn to him from then on. When I left the church, I was already a Christian, as much a Christian as it is possible to be before baptism." End of quotation. The next day, eager to tell Father Legrand what had happened, Hermann left Ems to return to Paris. Transformed by grace, he was virtually unrecognizable. He shut himself up in his room to study Christian doctrine, and immediately began to follow all of the practices of the Christian life: morning and evening prayer, the Mass, vespers and holy hours at the church, abstinences, chastity, all these he observed easily and readily. His greatest sorrow was his inability as of yet to receive Holy Communion. Quote, "Not yet having had the joy of making my first communion, I could not be present at that supreme moment without weeping from that privation that was killing me." Close quote. Every evening, Father Legrand received Hermann for instruction. On October the 15th, Father Theodore Ratisbonne baptized 4 Jewish converts in the chapel of Our Lady of Zion, with Hermann in attendance. Father Ratisbonne was himself, of course, a Jewish convert, as were all of the young girls in the choir. The service included a litany written by Father Ratisbonne, which includes the following verses, quote, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, have pity on the children of Israel. Jesus, divine Messiah, expected by the Jews, have pity on the children of Israel. Jesus, desire of the nations, Jesus of the tribe of Judah, Jesus who healed the deaf, the dumb, and the blind, have pity on the children of Israel. Lamb of God, who takes away the sins of the world, forgive them, for they know not what to do. Close quote. It was all that Herman could do to restrain himself from throwing himself at the priest's feet, begging to be baptized himself. Herman, in fact, was baptized just 13 days later, on August 28th, the feast of St. Augustine, in the very same chapel. The night before his baptism, as Herman recounted, the evil spirit sent a dream full of seductions, and reawoke in me burning images that I thought I had banished for good from my memory. Stumbling, I threw myself beside my bed, falling at the feet of my crucifix, and there, eyes full of tears, I begged the merciful aid of the All-Powerful, and the assistance of the most holy and most pure Virgin Mary, and the temptation fled. Close quote. The next day, in Herman's words, quote, on Saturday, August 28th, at 3 o'clock, the chapel of Our Lady of Zion shone with an unusual brilliance. The freshest and most beautiful flowers adorned the altar, resplendent with 1,000 candles. The convent bells were ringing out the most joyful carillons. A pious crowd filled the nave. A choir of young girls, covered with long white veils, sang beseechingly the litany for the conversion of the Jews. The organ mixed its harmonies with this beautiful singing. And never did an infant come into the world more tenderly surrounded by his brothers and sisters than did I when, simple catechumen, I approached the altar. Do you wish to be baptized? Yes, I wish to. Yes, you know, Lord, with what ardor I wish it, and how impatient I am to be yours. Then kneel down. The earth disappeared. The priest holding the shell with holy water was no longer a man. God had promised to descend himself in that moment and take possession. When the holy water touched my forehead, all of a sudden my body shook, and I felt such a violent, powerful movement that I can only compare to an electric shock. The eyes of my body were closed, but at that very moment the eyes of my soul opened to a supernatural and divine light. This light expanded in my whole being. God, the Holy Spirit, as though to seal his promise, descended from the heights of heaven to me, taking me by the hand and showing to me in ecstasy that which a finite being could never comprehend, the infinite. Yes, I saw an immense brilliance without end, better to say without space itself, because the sight soared, plunged ever further, never meeting an obstacle. Everywhere myriads of angels sang with an indescribable beauty, ever more beautiful, ever more ravishing, such as no human ear ever heard, and a soft warmth penetrated me. And my sight, despite the dazzling light that shone everywhere, never stopped plunging into the rays, and in the center reigned a light even more brilliant in its whiteness. There, sitting on a glorious throne, with on his right his glorious, well-beloved mother, was our Lord Jesus Christ, beautiful with an eternal youthfulness, and at his feet all around him, the army of saints, clothed in the most brilliant colors of the rainbow. These saints were prostrate at the foot of the throne, adoring him, and yet, at the same time, they turned and looked at me with sweet smiles of welcome. All of heaven and its inhabitants seemed to be rejoicing at my baptism, as though the poor small soul of a redeemed sinner could hold real weight in the scales of eternity. Yes, I saw the paradise of the church triumphant. No, it was not a vision, it was real. God permitted that I, miserable worm of earth, be admitted by a grace for which I could never find a name, to experience for an instant that which I scarcely dare remember. I was plunged into an ecstasy of love, my heart connected to the indescribable joys of paradise, and drinking at the torrent of delights with which the Lord drowns his elect in the land of the living. I was so moved that still today I can only imperfectly recall the ceremonies that followed. End of quotation. The Blessed Sacrament, which was the source of Herman Cohen's initial conversion, ever remained at the center of his spirituality, follows a quote from Herman Cohen's later writings. O Jesus, Eucharist, in the desert of this life you appeared one day. You revealed to me your light, your grandeur, your beauty. You changed my entire being. You, in an instant, vanquished all my enemies. then attracting me with an irresistible pull. You excited in my soul an all-consuming hunger for this bread of life. You lit in my heart a burning thirst for your divine blood. Then the day came when you gave yourself to me. Even today, when I remember it, my heart skips a beat, and I dare not breathe. End of quote. Describing one of the first Eucharistic processions at which he was present, Hermann wrote, quote, "When the Holy Eucharist passed by, I felt terrified. A torrent of tears came to my eyes. I felt a profound respect. I directly felt the real presence, an indescribable sensation. As long as the procession lasted, each time the Blessed Sacrament approached, my respectful terror and my humble love increased." Close quote. In 1848, just a year after his initial conversion experience, he started the Association of Nocturnal Adorers, a group of men dedicated to adoring our Lord and the Blessed Sacrament throughout the night. He started the group because, in his own words, quote, "To contemplate you, Jesus, and the Blessed Sacrament enough, the hours of the day fly by too quickly. I will call together other Christians burning with the same fire, and we will pass the nights in your churches. In the evening you will be exposed on the altar, and the dawn will find us still kneeling before your splendor. Nights beyond words. Let my right hand wither, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I ever forget you." Psalm 137, verses 5 and 6. And then back to Hermann Cohen's words, "In these heavenly nights, O my Jesus, you draw me to yourself by a charm so sweet and tender, so lovable, that the final thread tying me to this world is broken. And I run far from these cities to throw myself in your arms, to live entirely for you, undividedly, forever." Close quote. Again, a quote from Hermann Cohen about Eucharistic adoration. Quote, "Stripped of all that ties me to the earth, I can pierce the mysterious clouds that envelop your tabernacle and expose myself to the penetrating rays of this beautiful sun of grace and dive into this ocean of light to be consumed in the flames of this blazing furnace. Then, in the refreshing shade of this tree of life, I breathe the scent of the flowers, I savor the fruits." Close quote. Later, when Hermann Cohen became a Carmelite priest, he took a vow never to preach without extolling the Blessed Sacrament, and as he traveled throughout Europe preaching, he founded cells of the Association of Nocturnal Adorers wherever he went. Hermann Cohen did not abandon his love for his own Jewish people when he entered the church, quite the contrary. Upon his entry into the church, he took a vow, quote, "to do everything in the world for the conversion of the Jewish people." Close quote. When, in 1849, he joined the Carmelite order, it was in part the order's roots in the Old Testament that attracted him. As he wrote in a letter to his mother, quote, "I find myself in the novitiate of a religious order that is famous for its austerities, its penances, and its love of God. This order was born among the Jews 930 years before Jesus Christ. It was the prophet Elijah of the Old Testament who founded it on Mount Carmel in Palestine. It is an order of true Jews, of children of the prophets who waited for the Messiah, who believed in him when he came, and who continue to our time living always in the same manner, with the same bodily deprivations and the same spiritual joys as they lived on Mount Carmel in Judea about 2,800 years ago. They still bear today the name of the Order of Mount Carmel. Why follow this life? To draw down the mercy of the All-Powerful onto the earth, and to turn away his just anger, ready to strike those who offend him, to love God as he loved us, imitating the life Jesus led when he came on earth to save men, through suffering, self-denial, sacrifice, obedience, submission, humiliation, poverty, and death. This is the life I have chosen." Close quote. Hermann Cohen saw in the Catholic Church the fulfillment of the promises of the Old Testament. Quote, "Once I decided to believe in Jesus Christ, all that I read, felt, saw, and heard appeared to me in a new light, a dazzling, luminous light, and I tumbled from one joy to the next, as with this faith I saw the magnificent tableau of our holy scriptures unfold. I touched on each page this Messiah promised in the Old Testament. Close quote. He found nothing but joy in his new religious life. Quote, in the world during my life as an artist, I never had a childhood because I was introduced to the life of the salons at the age of 12. God in his great goodness has amply made up to me for that during my novitiate, where I rejoice in the joys of spiritual childhood. I am bathed in the milk of consolation and want nothing else but to see God's will alone in me and in everyone. Holy Communion occupies me totally, either in thanksgiving or in preparation. I prolong these in such a way that my life is a continual communion. This, I think, is like the joy of heaven. Here we are always in the real presence of the Eucharist. To express to you the happiness that I experience here without interruption since I took my habit would be impossible. It would take the pen of an angel to describe the delights of the interior life that one leads here in the novitiate. Being continually in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, and having nothing to distract the soul from the exercises of the religious life, one forgets the earth and one lives with the seraphim and cherubim, prostrating themselves eternally before the Lamb. It is a perpetual communion. The most extraordinary thing is that one barely notices the austerities of our life. Close quote. Hermann Cohn took his first religious vows in 1850, taking the religious name Augustine Mary of the Most Blessed Sacrament. He was ordained to the priesthood in 1851 and spent most of the rest of his life traveling around Europe, preaching and helping to establish new Carmelite foundations, despite the fact that his deepest longing was for an eremitical contemplative life. Wherever he went, he preached to huge, enthusiastic crowds, frequently drawing many to a conversion of their way of life on the spot. Usually his theme was the joy to be found in loving Jesus, as it was in the first sermon he preached in Paris at the Church of Saint Sulpice on April 24, 1854. Many acquaintances from his former life were in attendance. So too was a young Jewish man, Bernard Bauer, who had mingled with the crowd out of mere curiosity. By the end of the sermon he had made his decision, and within 2 months had taken the Carmelite habit. An extract from that very sermon follows, quote, my first thought as I appear in this Christian pulpit is to make amends for the bad example that I unhappily gave in this city in the past. You might well ask me, what right have you to preach to me, to exhort me to virtue and goodness, to teach me the truths of the faith, to speak to us of Jesus and Mary whom we love? You have so often dishonored them in our sight. You who have kept bad company and behaved outrageously, you who we know to have swallowed every false theory and so often insulted us with your conduct. Yes, my brethren, I confess that I have sinned against heaven and against you. I admit that I have deserved to be unpopular with you, and that I have forfeited your goodwill. I come to you, brethren, clothed in a robe of penance and committed to a strict order, barefooted and wearing a tonsure. Mary obtained for me from the God of the Eucharist a cure infinitely more important to me than that of my bodily eyes, that of freeing me from my spiritual blindness. It was the month of Mary, and they were singing hymns. Mary, the Mother of Jesus, revealed the Eucharist to me. I knew Jesus. I knew God. Soon I became a Christian. I asked for baptism, and before long the holy water was flowing over me. At that moment, all the many sins of my 25 years were wiped out. Brethren, God has pardoned me. Mary has pardoned me. Will you not pardon me, too? I have traveled throughout the world. I have loved the world. I have learned one thing about the world. You don't find happiness there. And you, brethren, have you found it? Can you say you are happy, that you do not want anything? It seems to me I can hear a sad chorus of sighs all around. I seem to hear the unanimous cry of suffering humanity, happiness, where are you? Tell me where you are hidden, and I will search for you, hold you, and possess you. I have looked for happiness. I have searched in cities and crossed the seas to find it. I have searched for happiness among the beauties of nature, the elegant life of salons, in the deafening din of balls and parties. I have sought it through the accumulation of gold, in the excitement of gambling, in the hazards of adventure and in trying to satisfy a boundless ambition. I have looked for it in the glory of the artist, in the friendships of famous people, and in all the pleasures of sense and spirit. Dear God, was there anywhere I failed to seek happiness? How can one explain this mystery? For human beings are made for happiness. The mystery is that most people don't know in what happiness consists. They look for it where it doesn't exist. Well then, listen. I have found happiness, I possess it. I enjoy it so fully that I am able to say with the great apostle, I am overflowing with joy. My heart brims over with happiness so that I cannot contain it within me. I wanted to leave my solitude in order to come and find you and tell you, I am overflowing with joy. Yes, I am so happy that I come to offer to you. I come to entreat you to share with me this overflowing happiness. But you object, I don't believe in Jesus Christ. I did not believe, and that is precisely why I was unhappy. Faith brings us to happiness in God and in Jesus Christ, his Son. It is a mystery which pride cannot grasp. But to find Jesus Christ, one must watch and pray. Scripture says, happy is the man who watches at the doors day and night. That is to say, who watches at the door of his heart to find Jesus Christ. So pray, ask, and you will receive this intoxicating wine of immortality, which flows from the wine press of prayer. Prayer imparts faith, sheds light through prayer, which, united to faith, imparts peace, love, wisdom, light, freedom, all of which are contained in Jesus Christ. It is not possible for someone who does not love Jesus Christ to be happy. End of quote. Well, we have just recounted the basic story of the conversion of Hermann Cohen, and I've just read a fairly lengthy extract from one of his early sermons that he preached in a church in Paris. And so it is probably a good time to take a short break. We'll take a short musical break, as we often do. And when we return, I will continue with reading more of the writings and sermons of Hermann Cohen and telling the rest of his life story. So we'll be back in a few moments. This is Roy Shoman on Radio Maria with a show dedicated to exploring the Jewish roots of the Catholic faith. Salvation is from the Jews. Be back in a few moments.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now return to a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.
Welcome back. This is Roy Shoman. The show is Salvation is from the Jews on Radio Maria. And we have been listening to me read the witness testimony, the conversion story of Herman Cohen, a Jewish musician who entered the Catholic Church in the middle of the 19th century and became a Carmelite monk and priest. We have been hearing his life story mostly from his own words and reading some homilies and writings of his about Jesus, about the Catholic faith, about the Most Blessed Sacrament. So I will continue reading from where I left off. I am reading from the chapter in my book, Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ, the chapter in that book which is about Herman Cohen. So back to the text. Father Cohen spent the rest of his life trying to bring others to the happiness that he had found. His constant theme was that happiness can only be found in Jesus Christ, particularly Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, as in the following sermon preached on the occasion of the baptism of another Jewish convert. Quote, "Do you believe, my brothers, that God converted us just for our own benefit? No, 1,000 times no. It is for others as much as for ourselves, that they may avoid the reefs against which we have shipwrecked. Yes, he has nailed us up as signposts before the gates of hell to say, don't go this way. Not finding the happiness I sought, I was continually fleeing he who was pursuing me. Up until that day I entered a church, and the priest at the altar was holding in his hand something white. I looked at the little host and heard the words, I am the way, the truth, and the life. My God, is it possible to have lived without thinking of Jesus, without loving Jesus, without living for Jesus and in Jesus? And now that your grace has awoken me, my eyes have seen, my hands have touched, my ears have heard, my heart has tasted, yes, I love Jesus Christ and no longer want to hide myself. I take it to be an honor to proclaim it to the whole universe. I love Jesus Christ. That's the secret of my immense happiness, which has only increased since I began to love him. I love Jesus Christ. I want to shout it to all the corners of the earth. I would like if the walls of this temple could expand and enclose all the millions of men who cover the globe, and that my voice could reach and penetrate all the fibers of their hearts and make them vibrate in unison with mine, and that all in a single voice would reply in an immense song of jubilation and triumph, reaching from earth to heaven, we too, we love Jesus Christ. It is not possible for someone who does not love Jesus Christ to be happy. We love being happy, and Jesus Christ, the only possible happiness, is not love. We love pleasure, splendor, but Jesus Christ, the most exquisite pleasure, the splendor of eternal glory, is not loved. O Jesus, my love, how I want to set my former friends on fire with the passion that inflames me. How I want to show them the happiness you give me. No, I dare say it, if the faith didn't teach me that contemplating you in heaven is a yet greater joy, I would never believe it possible that a greater happiness existed than that which I experience in loving you in the Eucharist and in receiving you in my poor heart, so rich because of you. What delicious peace, what happiness, what holy joy. If you no longer see me killing myself to get applause, scheming for empty honors, it is because I found my glory in the humble tabernacle of Jesus' host, Jesus God. If you no longer see me betting on a single card the wealth of an entire family, or breathlessly running after gold, it is because I found the true wealth, the inexhaustible treasure, in the ciborium of love that encloses Jesus' host. If I no longer deafen myself at your frivolous parties, it is because there is a wedding feast where I dine with the angels of heaven. It is because I have found the supreme happiness. Yes, I found it. The good that I love is mine. I possess it. Poor riches, sad pleasures, humiliating honors, which I chased after with you. But now that my eyes have seen, my hands have touched, my heart has beat upon the heart of a God, oh, how I pity your blind pursuit of pleasures that are incapable of filling your hearts. Come then to the celestial banquet prepared for you by eternal wisdom. Come, approach, Leave behind your little toys, your illusions. Throw far from you those lying rags that cover you. Ask Jesus for the white robe of pardon, and with a new heart, a pure heart, drink at the clear fountain of his love. Close quote. The one dark spot on Herman's happiness was his concern for his mother's soul, who did not follow him into the Catholic faith. On the Feast of the Immaculate Conception in 1852, he went on pilgrimage to a Marian shrine to pray for her salvation. Quote, Mother of Heaven, for your divine Son I have abandoned a mother on earth. Will you return her to me one day? As her Son once was, she still is, sitting in the shadow of death. She is looking for the coming of the Messiah in the future. She does not know that the bright star of Jacob has appeared for us, and that its brilliance has shone for 18 centuries without eclipse in the skies of the Church. She does not know that you were its dawn, and that your sweet light never ceases to direct the steps of the weakest mortals towards this Son of Justice that God has given us to enlighten all the nations and to be the glory of his people, Israel. O Mary, daughter of Israel, she belongs to your family. Turn then upon her a look of pity and of love. O Mary, you have saved the Son. Let him not then be forever separated from his mother. She is your image for me, and her memory never enters my heart alone. She gave me birth in suffering, and you also, to give me a second life, adopted me as your child, at a price as high as all of the sufferings of Calvary. O Mother of Jesus, O my Mother, if the thoughts of earth are not transformed on high, how could I see you without her in heaven with full joy? Would not her eternal loss be a cloud upon my happiness? End of quotation, end of quoted prayer of Herman Cohen to the Blessed Virgin Mary on behalf of his unconverted Jewish mother. Now, when his mother passed away in late 1854, still not having embraced the Catholic faith, Father Cohen was deeply distressed. In his anguish, he spoke with his friend, the Curé of Ars, who reassured him with a mysterious prophecy. What follows is a quote from the Curé of Ars. Quote, Hope, hope, you will receive one day on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception a letter which will bring you great joy. End of the quotation from the Curé of Ars. 7 years later, on December 8, 1861, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, a Jesuit priest brought Father Cohen a letter that had been written by a woman who was well known for her sanctity and interior life, who had herself written a number of well-regarded books on Catholic spirituality. This letter contained an account of a revelation that she had received a few months earlier. Now, what follows is a quotation from her letter, the letter of this devout Catholic woman, about the death of Herman Cohen's mother. Quote, My Jesus showed me in a ray of his divine light that the moment that Father Herman's mother was on the point of dying, when she seemed already unconscious, almost dead, Mary, our Blessed Mother, presented herself before her divine Son and, prostrating herself at his feet, said, Grace, pity, O my Son, for the soul is about to perish. In an instant she will be lost, lost for eternity. Do, I beg you, for the mother of your servant Herman, that which you would want him to do for yours, if she was in her place and you in his. He has consecrated her to me. Can I allow her to perish? No, this soul is my prize. I want it, I claim it, as the price of your blood, of my sorrows, at the foot of your cross. End of quotation of the Blessed Virgin Mary in this vision. Scarcely had the divine supplicant stopped speaking than a strong, powerful grace came out of the source of all graces, the adorable heart of Jesus, and illumined the soul of the poor dying Jewish woman, and instantly vanquished her stubbornness and resistance. This soul immediately turned with a loving confidence towards him whose mercy had pursued her into the arms of death, and said to him, O my Jesus, God of the Christians, God whom my Son adores, I believe in you, I hope in you, have pity on me. Close quote. End of the quotation from the letter which was delivered to Father Herman Cohen on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, 1861, in which a devout, pious Catholic woman had had a vision of the soul of Hermann Cohen's mother at the point of death and saw the Blessed Virgin Mary intercede to her son Jesus for the soul of Hermann Cohen's mother, and was successful, and the soul was saved. When the Franco-Prussian War broke out in 1870, Hermann decided to leave France for neutral Switzerland in order to protect his community from potential harassment on the basis of his German nationality. After a few months ministering outside Geneva, the local bishop summoned him with a special request. The many thousands of French prisoners of war being held in German prisoner of war camps were being deprived of the sacraments because the German government would not allow any French priests to enter. Hermann, as a German national, would probably be allowed in. Was he willing to go? Hermann immediately agreed, although he had a premonition of the outcome. On leaving Switzerland, he was heard to say, "Germany will be my tomb." But, as he said later in a letter to his sister, "I did not feel that I could decline, since Jesus said to those he reproved, 'I was a prisoner, and you did not visit me.'" Hermann left for the POW camp in Spandau, outside Berlin, on November 24, 1870, the feast of the consummate Carmelite saint, John of the Cross. When he arrived, he found over 5,000 underfed and underclothed prisoners, many deathly ill in the freezing Prussian winter. He ministered to all of their needs, celebrating Mass daily, hearing their confessions, visiting the sick, consoling the despairing, administering last rites to the dying, as well as taking care of temporal needs, such as obtaining additional clothing for them. Hermann held nothing back, working in the freezing cold from before dawn to late at night, and soon the brutal conditions took their toll. A fellow priest who saw him at the time recounted, "I found him aged and pale, his expression exhausted but joyful. I saw on his forehead something like a halo, ready to shine soon." On January 9, 1871, Father Cohen was called to administer the last rites to two prisoners dying of smallpox. Unable to find the spatula usually used for the anointing oil, and aware of the urgency of the moment, he did not hesitate to use his finger, despite a scratch on it that exposed him to the deadly infection. He contracted the disease and died of it just 11 days later, on January 20, 1871, the exact anniversary of the apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary to his fellow Jewish convert and friend, Alphonse Ratisbonne. His last words were, "And now, O my God, into your hands I commend my spirit." Father Hermann's cause for beatification is being promoted and is underway. End of the reading of the chapter on Hermann Cohen from Honey from the Rock. This is Roy Shoman, and I have been reading a chapter from my book, Honey from the Rock, a chapter which recounts the life, the conversion, and the work of another Jewish convert to the Catholic Church, who might easily be a saint someday, certainly seems to have been a saint, Father Hermann Cohen. I hope you've enjoyed this presentation. Let me know, by the way, because I am doing various things on this show, all of which I hope that you enjoy, and I even hope might feed your faith, feed our faith. And it's been a mix of things. It's been conversations with other Jewish converts to the Catholic faith, their witness testimonies. It's been speaking about Jewish celebrations. And today I've started something a little bit new, which is reading the accounts of other Jewish converts. So drop me an email if you feel like it, and let me know what works best for you, what you like and what you don't like, and I can reflect that in my choice of things to do with future programs. You can email me at shoman@catholic.org. That's my last name, Shoman, S-C-H-O-E-M-A-N, @catholic.org. And let me know what you think, and let me know what you like and what you like perhaps a little bit less or might even not like. Anyway, that brings us to the end of today's program. I hope you enjoyed it. This program, as all the programs in this series, are available archived to either listen to again or to listen to shows that you might have missed. The more recent programs, perhaps running back about 2 months, are available archived at radiomaria.us in their program archive. And all of the shows going back to the beginning of the series are available on my website, salvationisfromthejews.com. That's salvationisfromthejews, all one word, .com. On that website, on my website, you'll also find many other Jewish Catholic witness testimonies in audio and text and so forth, and a lot of discussion of things of interest to people who are interested in the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church. And there you will also find a posting of my upcoming speaking appearances and television shows and radio shows and so forth. By the way, now that it comes to mind, I will be on EWTN television the last week of January. That's January 27th to 31st. That's a Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the show Women of Grace. I'll be the guest with the host or hostess, Jarnette Benkovich. I'm actually joined as a guest with another friend of mine, a Jew, another Jew who has gratefully entered the Catholic Church, who is actually now a Catholic priest, a Father Peter Sabbath. So if you're interested in this show, you'll probably be interested in catching that if EWTN is available to you. That's the EWTN show, Women of Grace, hosted by Jarnette Benkovich, for the week January 27th through 31st, that's 2014, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on EWTN television. Anyway, that brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you join us again next week on Salvation is from the Jews on Radio Maria. Bye for now.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The program you just heard was a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.